This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and a big warm welcome to the Total Saints podcast. This is our weekly get-together to discuss the last 7 days supporting Southampton Football Club. We're live streaming our podcast on Facebook, Twitter, Twitch and YouTube. And if you're watching on YouTube, do make sure that you hit the subscribe button and then you'll be the first to see all of our new videos. As always, a massive thank you to our TSP patrons who make all of this possible. You can visit patreon.com/Total Saints podcast to find out more about getting involved. So coming up this week on the pod, just when you thought the season was over, Saints pick up a point at Arsenal and keep the hopes of survival alive, but it could have been more. And will those dropped points prove vital? And there are 6 points up for grabs this week with two huge games, Bournemouth at home on Thursday and Newcastle away on Sunday. We will preview both of those matches. My name is Martin Stark and I'm joined this week by Steve Grant, who's the owner of Saints Web. Glenda Lacour is the writer of the blog League One Minus 10 and Jacob Tanswell is the Southampton reporter for The Athletic. All underpinned by our TSP patrons, this is episode 230 of the Total Saints podcast.
Your home for everything Southampton FC. From dedicated Saints insight to exclusive interviews. Live on YouTube every Sunday and available to download wherever you listen to your podcasts. This is the Total Saints Podcast.
Now, before the game, we'd have probably taken a point against the league leaders, but in the end, it was a result that didn't really suit either side. 3-3, the final score at the Emirates. Steve, I'm going to start with you. You were there on Friday. Could you believe that start? Were you in your seats when we took the lead?
I was in quite early, actually, basically on the basis of, oh, can we just get this done with, please? kind of thought process. And yet, yeah, I mean, that was just madness. I mean, let's be honest here. Arsenal gave us that opening start. That was just extraordinary. Ramsdale has been prone to this throughout his entire career, and obviously he's started well at Arsenal, but there have been little signs just creeping in that he's kind of just slipping back into old ways. And I think there have been sort of moments the last probably month or so where kind of all those people who were shouting for him to be England number one ahead of Jordan Pickford have kind of fairly firmly been put back in their box for the time being, I think. And yeah, I mean, it's an extraordinary start. And I mean, the fact that we then managed to kind of double down on that with the Walcott goal only, 13, 14 minutes later, all of a sudden you've given yourself a huge, huge opportunity. I mean, we were still obviously well up against it regardless. I mean, let's not forget it was only a month or so ago that Bournemouth were two up. I think on the hour they scored their second goal. And Arsenal still found the way and the quality to come back. So it was always still gonna be tough. But actually I thought defensively we were pretty sound. I mean they were obviously gonna create something, but I mean, up until basically the end, that crazy last sort of 2 minutes of normal time plus injury time, I don't think Bazunu's had a save to make.
Could you sense the nervousness in the stadium and the atmosphere for that first half hour once we got at them?
Not hugely, because they were still running at us. They were still kind of forcing open space, if you like, in the wide areas. Martinelli and Saka caused absolute havoc to Pero and Walker-Peters, who obviously both got booked in the first half for kind of pulling the guys back, which obviously is a much... much more serious offence than basically nearly breaking a guy's neck, which didn't attract the attention of Simon Hooper whatsoever. But yeah, I think it wasn't nervousness as such. It was frustration, certainly from the home crowd. I mean, it's the loudest I've ever seen the Emirates. I mean, it's a very low bar to clear, obviously, but it was loud pretty much from the start, almost throughout, basically up until probably around 75 minutes, at which point kind of they'd not had a shot on target in the second half. They'd only really mustered probably one chance, which was that one that Jesus willied over from close range. And at that point, there were a few people starting to kind of trundle away and thinking, well, I know what the tube's like, I'm getting out of here. And it was literally probably about 30 seconds to a minute or so before Odegaard scored that second goal, that you kind of looked around and it genuinely felt like Arsenal had run out of ideas at that point. And I think the crowd had resigned themselves to that as well. That was the point where it felt like we've actually got probably 90% of the job done here. And then Odegaard magics a goal out of nothing. And I don't think there's any blame to be had on anybody for the way that goal was manufactured. And then all of a sudden you've given them something to cling on to. And I mean, you could physically see people rushing back in down the down the aisles, back into their seats, which was faintly ridiculous. At the end of the day, they put enough pressure on us. Not sure we quite regained our heads. You could see, like, immediately a couple of minutes into the sort of added on time period, Ward-Prowse goes down injured on the edge of the area. That's clearly a tactic to try and take the sting out of things and let everybody regroup and get their head screwed back on, because we were absolutely losing the plot for 5 minutes there. And I mean, you could argue that we kind of got away with it to an extent, but I think we were probably good value, having scored the goals that we did, and we kept them kind of at arm's length for the vast majority of it. It was just those last few minutes that did us, unfortunately.
We'll get into the team selection and the goals in just a minute, Glenn. But when that second Arsenal goal went in, there was kind of that inevitability, wasn't it? We all knew how this was going to end, and we weren't getting away there 3-2.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, what was the second goal? 88 minutes. Hmm. And I don't think the board had gone up yet for how much time was left or was going to be added. You know, the 8 minutes. But yeah, once they got back to 3-2, you could see we were kind of done, and it was just a case of whether they'd get another shot on target. And unfortunately, the third goal was from the very next attack. You know, it's another parry back into a dangerous area by Bazunu. It would be harsh to blame him too much for that. But yeah, it was unfortunate, and Saka reacted quicker than we did. I think Belakotchap slipped over as well. So yeah, there was an inevitability about it. And then, of course, when the 8 minutes went up, you're thinking, we're going to lose now. And and Simon Hooper got into full, oh, this is a great story, Arsenal comeback mode, because he just then stopped giving us anything. I mean, there was the sprint by Sulemana down the right hand side, where he got barged by Odegaard. It was like an American football tackle, and then Nelson smashed into him. And to be honest, technically that should be a red card, because he hasn't even gone to play the ball. He's just smashed into him. It's an absurd challenge. And Simon Hooper was like, oh no, this is a great story, play on. And yeah, so in the end, it was you know, it was good to get to the end, obviously, and get a point out of it. But it's not enough. Both teams lost, basically. Arsenal needed a win. We needed a win. And having been two goals up, you know, we've kind of blown it. And it's a shame. And I know we might talk about that. I mean, the substitution at the end is murder. It's murder. I mean, unless Lavia's dead on his feet and can't move, it's a bad substitution for two reasons, because it's bought on an inferior player, massively inferior player, and whoever gets brought on has really got to get up to speed straight away. And it's just, you know, unless Lavia couldn't move, it's just an absurd substitution to make at 88 minutes, even though we are 2-0 up. Oh, sorry, 2 goals up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was obviously at 3-1. That gave me a bad feeling. And then they scored straight away. And it's just like, oh, here we go.
Jacob, it's probably a good idea that the game was on a Friday, because I guess you needed the Saturday to recover. I mean, how do you sum it up? I think you might have said in one of your pieces, at any other time of the season, that's a really good result. But unfortunately, it's not, is it? It's a huge opportunity that we've blown there.
Yeah, Sellers admitted afterwards that his 2 points dropped. I think, you know, Steve alluded to it, but at the full-time whistle, it went from everyone at the Emirates stood up, deafening noise, to and just silence. No one really moving on the pitch either. It was quite bizarre, but I thought, you know, I really liked what Southampton did for a large part of that game, because although they had, 25% possession second half, they were still trying to be proactive. You know, Lavia was still trying to put pressure onto Odegaard or onto Partey. And I thought, for the most part, even though they went back to a back five, I think that kind of helped Southampton. I know we'll probably get onto the Charlie Alcaraz substitution, but I can see the thinking behind it. I watched throughout that first half, I was thinking, he's cleared one off the line, he's got an assist, he's got a goal, but Sellis was screaming at him. Carl Martin was screaming at him. He was not blocking the passing lane. Odegaard was receiving it, and, you know, out wide, as Steve said, you know, Saints were getting killed out there. So I can understand that. There's just a sinking feeling and deflation, because if Southampton had picked up a win against Crystal Palace, against Leeds, against all these type of teams, then you'd be fantastic. Saints are in a good position, momentum into Thursday, but it's just that sense of another opportunity's gone. And I think, you know, when Ward-Prowse went down in that 90th minute or so, it reminded me of when Stuart Armstrong got booked for delaying kickoff at Old Trafford, just desperate, just...
But they didn't score the 10th
stop. Please just stop. Poor one, Onuachu as well, I thought was very disappointing. Like I think he was offside from Gavin Bazuna kicking it long after the restart. And I just thought that kind of just, you know, stopped Southampton having that counter-attacking threat as well. So, yeah, overall, a lot of positives, but at the point of the season where positives aren't enough, are they?
No, a lot of talk, Glenn, last week about false nines. And we actually started our number nine on Friday, albeit Adam Armstrong, who doesn't really play as a nine, and another striker coming in from the cold and next to no impact. It seems strange.
Yeah.
Started with Joe Aribo last week, Ruben Sellers saying after the game that he was happy with his contribution on and off the ball when he thought he had a good game. Then he finds himself out of the team and somebody else coming in.
I do wonder if Sellers is sponsored by Make-A-Wish. You know, and he just brings in one player from nowhere every week. So, I mean, my money's on Mislav Orsic playing against Bournemouth. Because
up front on Thursday.
Because why not? You know, he plays that sort of left-wing role, so it's probably his turn to come in from the cold. Or Sam Adozie, you know, someone who's not done anything for weeks. Yeah, it was a strange one, very strange, because Adam Armstrong has not done anything all season, really. So for him to come back in for this game... I mean, we actually set up a little bit like, you know, like the classic Jurgen Klopp team at Liverpool with the false nine and the two wingers sort of pushing on, if you like, Walcott and Armstrong. And you could kind of see the theory behind it. And we said a couple of weeks ago that, you know, revisiting the false nine thing might not be bad for this game against Arsenal. I mean, it's a problem when you do it at home to Crystal Palace. But overall, it was better than I thought it was going to be. And it really played into our hands. You know, Ramsdale throwing us a goal in the first minute, because it was a team, obviously with Elyounoussi coming back in, it's a team that's set up to be solid. Virtually everyone is in that team for their defensive capability, such as it is relative to other players. And, you know, it was okay. Getting the second goal was brilliant, but Arsenal were terrible in that first 20. They were all over the shop, but we were good enough, if you like, to take advantage. Alcaraz is probably the only player we've got who could have scored that first goal. If he'd given it to anybody else, I very much doubt it would have ended up in the net.
You could see him moving as well before he kicked it. It was that intuition that he's got. He spotted that pass was coming.
It was hiding behind Partey, wasn't he? So I wondered if Ramsdale just didn't see him when he threw it into midfield.
Yeah. It was a strange one. It was a brilliant bit of anticipation, though. And the finish was really good, because he didn't panic. He didn't try and beat, I think it was Gabriel that was in front of him. He just saw the angle and and Chocolate Wrist did the rest because he got into it. He should have done better with that.
Should have done, yeah.
But you know, to go 1-0 up, and it was a wonderful ball from Alcaraz for the second goal, because it's just perfectly weighted, and that's what Walcott is good at, is the runs into space ahead of the ball to pick it up. We've got so few players who do that. In fact, we've probably got one player who does that. And that second goal was great as well. But it was, Adam Armstrong was strange. And it was, I thought it was really noticeable that it was a very high quality game in terms of the pace of it and obviously the quality of the opposition. And our lesser players, let's call them that, Adam Armstrong, Elyounoussi, Diallo, they barely touched the ball between them. I just don't think they were sort of up to playing in a game like that. And the issue, I think, at the end was caused by, you know, Diallo coming on for Lavia just gave us one more kind of player who was always going to struggle. Mm. And then we kind of caved in. And yeah, it's a shame. But I'll be interested to see what the next instalment of the 11th player Tom Bowler brings us on Thursday.
Steve, you were talking last week about those early balls in for Walcott and saying if he was in a different side, he scores more goals. And that was a great play by Alcaraz to feed him in just in the right place and a good finish.
Yeah. But it was, as I say, it was exactly what we'd seen him do over the years for Arsenal and for England in similar situations as well. Basically, with Walcott, don't give him time to think about what he's going to do. Just let him finish on instinct, and he's as good as anybody. You give him 40 yards to run into in that time, and he's got five different decisions to make. And that's the point at which he probably makes a bit of a mess of it. But yeah, having someone who can actually spot and play those passes at the right time. I mean, it did help that Gabriel was all over the place positionally for that run, because he was a good five, like looking back on the highlights, he was a good 5 yards behind everybody else. Zinchenko was 15 yards ahead of everybody else, and all of a sudden that gave us that bit of space to play it in. And Alcaraz was spotted that Walcott gave him the point of where he wanted it, because I think ordinarily Alcaraz would have played it into Walcott's path in the wide position. And then at that point, it's like, well, okay, can you still manufacture a bit of space to force a shot? But playing it inside the centre back at the sort of very last moment, right just before he's going to make the run, you then basically give the defender absolutely no chance of blocking anything off. And yeah, good finish by Walcott. And yeah, that at that stage, you're thinking, what the hell is going on here?
That's exactly what we were all thinking. We'll get into some of the changes that we made. The first of those, Jacob, was Bednarek having to go off because of the knock he took to the head. And it was an interesting argument he was having with the doctor on the sideline. And then he was involved with some of the coaching in the second half, having a word with Lianco and Seletasar as well, and just trying to point them in the right direction. That's definitely a player that was giving everything he had and fighting for the cause on Friday.
Yeah, he's been rebuilt now. I wonder if Glenn's changed his opinion on him. I think I really enjoyed it in terms of Jan Bennett just arguing with the physio, wanting to come back on. Obviously, was called a number of things by the Arsenal fans as he made his way around the pitch to sit down and take his seat. And then second half, with his hood up, he went full Cristiano Ronaldo Euro 2016 and became a quasi-manager. And fair play to Lianco and Seletasar for listening, because Bednarek likes to point a lot after every goal they concede. He always seems to be the one that wants to quiz everyone and investigate what's gone wrong. But I really like that for Bednarek. You know, 6 months ago, he was on loan at Aston Villa, not really doing much. His reputation was shattered, really. He was he didn't really play in the World Cup. Southampton fans couldn't stand him. And the fact he's come back in a difficult situation with Nathan Jones there, brought him back because he wanted to play three centre-backs, and he's continued to play under Sellers. And I think he's one of the few players, or not one of the few, that's being harsh, but one of the players that you look at and you think he's given it all. And when you compare that to another centre-back who's currently not in the squad because of a whatever injury, take it how it is, then you can really see the difference. And maybe you've gone from Jan Bednarek doing a short-term job to you could see him here next year, even if they go down, because his commitment's unwavering. And you saw that the other night.
It really has been a strange season, hasn't it? Glenn, that switch to five at the back, I mean, for me, it came a bit too early. You can see why he did it. And I know he was trying to justify it afterwards about Perot and Walker Peters with the yellow cards and, you know, Alcaraz and giving him a bit of grief from the sidelines. But 45 minutes plus is a long time to invite the pressure on when you're playing against a team that need the points to win the league.
He's inherently a very defense-minded manager. And that seems to permeate through to everything he does. If you remember the two games that we've won under him against Chelsea and Leicester, it was around the hour mark, I think. He, you know, took players off and went very defensive. And trying to do it from 45 minutes when you're only one goal up against Arsenal, well, yeah, I felt it was early as well. I didn't totally disagree with the formation change at the time, because the idea was, I think, to get the fullbacks wider. So they didn't give Martinelli and Saka, who at the end of the day are two very, very good players, you know, as much space, especially with the fullbacks on yellow cards as well. So I could kind of see the logic behind it. But taking our best player off was madness when you left Adam Armstrong on the pitch. If you're worried about Alcaraz closing down, shove him up front, because you've got a player there who's got a goal and an assist and been in the middle of everything that we've done positive going forward. But it doesn't seem to matter about that. It's like, oh, let's get him off. It's just crazy. I cannot think of a single other manager in the league who would have taken him off at halftime, even though he was on a yellow card. He was our best player by a mile. And but he just seems to be, you know, he just seems to be tarred with this brush about, you know, not tracking back in the same way that Sulemana is, in a way. And, you know, it's a constant irritation to me that there doesn't seem to be any balance between, you know, players who are in there for their defensive capabilities. I mean, you've picked Elie Nussi for that. So surely we can have one player who actually looks to make things happen at the other end of the pitch. We went 3-1 up. It was the first time we made any sort of foray up the pitch in the second half, and we won a corner. And yeah, great
scored a corner for the first time in God knows how long.
Yeah, it's great flick on, and to see the big man at the back post, he, you know, up celebrating even before he headed it, because it's just great. But that was the first time we got in their half, because at the start of the second half, it was just like a line of five, a line of four probably, and then Walcott up on his Adam Armstrong up on his own, not holding the ball up or getting a touch. Mm. So yeah, it was. You know, going 3-1 up was a little bit fortunate, bearing in mind how little pressure we'd put on them in the second half. But yeah, I don't like taking off your best player just because he's attack minded. It just does my head in.
Is it play stoppers, Steve? That was the kind of buzzword this week, wasn't it? You know, he's picking players because they're play stoppers rather than goal scorers, and even the play stoppers couldn't stop the play for the last 10 minutes.
Well, the play stoppers couldn't stop the play because, unfortunately, Arsenal's ball boys were incredibly well trained. the ball was never over that line for longer than 3 seconds. It was incredible. I mean, as Glenn said, I can kind of see where Sellers is coming from, but at the end of the day, these are Premier League players, and you've just got to trust that the best players on the pitch are able to get the job done. I mean, even if you, okay, fine, you want to reshuffle things and take Alcaraz off to make sure he doesn't get a second booking. Okay, fine, do it on 65, 70 minutes. Give us that extra 20 minutes of higher quality in our midfield where actually we might force them back a little bit more, give them something else to think about.
Yeah.
And then take him off. Okay, fine. He's played 70 minutes. He's run himself into the ground. And okay, now we're gonna shift to full on defensive mode. Extra centre back on. We readjust because everybody's practiced this system before, supposedly. And yeah, everyone knows their jobs. Everyone knows what they've got to do when we switch to that system. It shouldn't need to be something that takes place at half time. So yeah, I think that was a little bit frustrating. Also agree with Glenn on the Lavia substitution. If he's not actually injured, you've just got to leave him there because he's up to the pace of the game. Yes, okay, his legs are tiring, but everybody's legs are tiring. I mean, you saw the way that basically all 22 players collapsed on the ground when that final whistle went. It was I mean, it was exhausting to watch. So I can't begin to imagine how knackering that game was to be playing in it, especially with, I mean, best part of 20 minutes added on. I mean, I don't know when Simon Hooper got the call from PGMOL to say, oh, by the way, tonight we're doing the World Cup group stage injury time. so we're basically going to play forever. And that was just nonsense, absolute nonsense, given how little time we were actually able to waste because of the Arsenal ball boys. We weren't able to waste any sort of time that would justify having that much added on at either end of the game. Absolutely ridiculous. And if he's trying to kind of prove a point in some way, then I mean you've got to be fair to everybody, and it's got to be something that happens for a season, not for one individual game, because you think one team is gonna try and waste time. Every team wastes time against the top teams. Newcastle, when they went to the Emirates around Christmas time, it was typical Eddie Howe. It was basically stop the game, make sure that the game can't restart. Everybody rolls around injured, and you just absolutely take the to the nth degree. We weren't doing that. Like literally, we had to be assaulted for us to even get a free kick, and even that wasn't enough in that last 5 minutes with Sulemana. Whereas we breathe on an Arsenal player, and yep, free kick. Everybody's got a retreat, and Arsenal get the ball again. It's absolutely ridiculous.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Well, it's a point we weren't expecting, let's be honest. Six games to go. Two of those are going to be in the next week. Whatever happened this weekend, we are still only 4 points away from safety, which is complete madness. It's Bournemouth on Thursday. Jacob, are you nervous about this or excited? Because as far as I'm concerned, we know what happens and it ends with us losing 1-0.
I was excited before the game against Crystal Palace, but I've been firmly put back into my place. I'm extremely nervous because Bournemouth, if you've seen them before, with Gary O'Neill, they're set up to counter. They can really only play one way, and all their success this season has been on transition. And I do worry that Slamton, especially with St Mary's hoodoo and the atmosphere, it could fall flat quite quickly. I know it's a South Coast derby, but with the way Bournemouth play, a low block, I think Southampton are quite slow in terms of breaking teams down, and they've got that pace on the counter-attack. And I just worry that Southampton are going to commit too much, especially their fullbacks pushing up. And then you've got Watara, you've got Solanke, who can really exploit the space in behind. And I could see it being quite a frustrating evening. But both teams are not that good in defending set pieces either. So that could potentially be an avenue Southampton can exploit going the other way. But it's going to be a game that I think Southampton need to get an early goal. Otherwise, they'll just continue to be laboured. And I see the same way as the Crystal Palace game will go.
We've been here before, haven't we, Glenn? I mean, if we beat Bournemouth, we could be 1 point from safety and back in the scrap, lose. And to be honest, we don't deserve to be in the league anyway, do we, if we can't beat Bournemouth at home?
No, I said this months ago, if we can't beat Bournemouth at home, you don't deserve to stay up anyway. And it'd be nice to be 1 point from safety, but it's we're still the turd that won't flush, aren't we? We're still only only 4 points. It's mad. But yeah, we've been here lots of times, and again, repeating myself, boring. We have to win. There are not many more chances coming along, are there? So Bournemouth have got to a position of relative safety because they've won their 6-pointers. And they beat the out of form big teams. They beat Liverpool. They beat Spurs. Whereas you could argue that we drew with Man United with 10 men, and we drew having been 3-1 up against Arsenal. So they've done what they needed to do, and you got to say fair play to them because I've been saying all season I thought they finished flat last, and they're not going to. They're 9 points ahead of us. So even if we win on Thursday, there's still a hell of a difference. But I mean, this really gets them over the line, doesn't it, if they win? So I'm sure they're going to go for it, even though they've had a right slap today, because, you know, they would have thought the same going into today's game, especially with West Ham having played in Europe a couple of days ago. So yeah, today was a bad one. And I don't really know what that means for the game against us, because, yes, it's nice that they got a bit of a kick in, and obviously their best player, Jack Stevens, won't be able to play against us. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they set up. And, yeah, like Jacob says, I think the first goal is going to be massive in that. But if we score the first goal after 20 minutes, I could see Ruben taking off every player that's got any attacking intent whatsoever. And we'll just end up with Lianco and Chiletazar in midfield. And that'll be the end of that, just booting the ball miles. So, yeah, interesting to see how we approach it.
It could come down to the corners, Steve, if their result of the weekend was anything to go by.
Yeah, I mean, from what I gather, I've not seen the goals yet, but by all accounts, they were absolutely atrocious in the first half today. So, yeah, I mean, if our analytics and scouting guys have got anything about them, then notes passed to coaching and management team are work on attacking set pieces and work on them hard and fast. Because if we get corners, that Bournemouth back four, especially without the guy that's basically organising them. That was the one thing that we always credited Jack Stevens with, is that he was a good organiser of other people. Not necessarily so good at organising his own game, but he was really good at organising those around him. His communication's excellent, and they'll miss having that on Thursday, because he obviously can't play. So, I mean, I'm not sure who they'll bring in instead of him, but it'll be a step down in communications stakes. And of course, it'll be a defender that's not been playing in the team, that's been doing perfectly reasonably the last, what, month or so. So, yeah, set pieces are going to be massive. And I mean, it'd be interesting to see whether Bednarek's available at the other end, because, I mean, he kind of feels like he's the sort of de facto organizer now. I mean, as Jacob said, he's always the one certainly the most vocal after we've conceded. Whether that extends to organize people before the goals go in or not, I'm not.
It's a shame we don't get points for huddles. If we got points for huddles, we'd be all right.
Great at that.
we're good at organizing huddles, aren't we? And having a chat about it. Just, I mean, Jacob, it's a gift that we've been given, isn't it? I mean, win this and we're back in it. But I'm really, really nervous about this game. In a way, I think a friend said, if we'd have lost on Friday night, then you'd have got over it on Saturday morning and moved on, and that'd be fine. But it's been playing on my mind that, you know, there's still a glimmer of hope.
It's just a hope, isn't it? I think after every single home defeat, I think you always go, oh, that's it, Dan, let's prepare for the championship. But then you have these performances, which it's been a theme throughout Celis' tenure, really, so far, in terms of doing well against the bigger teams and terrible against the six-pointers. But it's that hope. What I would like to see, and I think we see that against the bigger teams, is a bit more width. I think at St Mary's, it's too processed. And I think that gets a little bit misconstrued with being defensive. I think Southampton and Celis are very particular and they're very mechanical in the way they want to play, which is not really how you want to go in a relegation dogfight. You see a lot of teams just play percentages, probably more leaning so towards Nathan James football than Celis. But because it's so intricate and because he wants his number 10s in the right positions and there's no striker, some people might think, oh, it's a little bit pragmatic, a little bit boring, but a little bit defensive as well. But I think Southampton need to have a bit more width. I think Walcott, imagine us saying that about 3 or 4 months ago. He's the key player. He's the one that runs in behind. He stretches play. And Bournemouth's defence is slow. Adam Smith has seen better days. Jack Stevens won't be there. Chris Meppham, slow 1v1. Zabani, he could play. He could make his debut. The young Ukrainian lad, he's good, but it's just going to be his first in that game. And Lloyd Kelly, who has basically been in and out the team, and he's playing at left back now. And, you know, he's 6'4" or whatever, and he's not too good at turning quickly. So I think if Walcott's there, I think if Southampton can be on a front foot, pressurise, then they can take advantage and hopefully ease the nerves early on.
Glenn, I've still got you down for that 1-0 defeat. Do you want to stick with that, or do you want to change in terms of your prediction?
No, I'll stick with that. This team has so many times this season proven incapable to back up one decent performance with another. And obviously, you know, it's well documented how we've done against the poorer teams, especially the ones who just sit in, like, you know, Jacob says, what Bournemouth are going to do. So on the other side of that, Bournemouth are usually terrible when they play us for some reason. They seem to build it up as some big thing, which we don't. And then they're terrible. And that's what happened in the game at Dean Court, or whatever it's called these days. The Vitality Shed. That seemed to be the, what happened there. So, and we won that relatively comfortably, even though it was only 1-0. So it's a case of, will they be worse than us? I don't know. I'm not expecting it to be a particularly good game. I'm just, it's just hope that we can break the habit of a lifetime and put away a team that we really should put away. But I would still say the most logical, based on this season scoreline on Thursday, is 1-0 to them.
Yeah, I can see it be a carbon copy of the Palace game. Steve, you get a bit more optimistic about it, your score prediction?
My kind of sort of angle that I'm looking at from a relatively, just pure sort of hope perspective is that most of our wins this season have been in doubles. So we've done the double over Leicester, we've done the double over Chelsea. That's four of our six wins.
Okay.
So do the double over Bournemouth. Why not? And we've shown that we can score goals again. And Bournemouth's defense is garbage, isn't it? Come on, we've got to be able to score against a team that
you're not going for 3-0.
I mean, once again, Bournemouth's back four has conceded 60 goals in a Premier League season already. So yeah, 2-0.
2-0. All right, I can see Tor Paul starting up front in your lottery.
Oh God, haven't seen his first touch on Friday.
Can we talk about that? He's dreadful, isn't he? My word!
I don't think anybody's going to be clamoring for him to start between now and the end of the season. I think we're over that one. We're good. Jacob, score prediction from you, please.
If this was going to be a game where Tor Paul would start, it's got to be this one because Bournemouth can't defend crosses at all. But I'd
play for the corners.
I'd probably bring him on. Yeah, Lianco long throws or Benrick long throws, last 20. Call me mad, but I think Salamson are going to turn up for once, and I think they're going to build on that first half against Arsenal, and I think they will blow Bournemouth away. I think Bournemouth will build this one up. They will build this one up. They've been talking about it. They've been messaging me for like 5 months about it. I think Southampton will win 3-0.
Right. Okay. I mean, the good thing is it's not like this is recorded or online or anything. So
I'm putting it out there.
If you're watching along, you can stick your predictions in the comments, by the way.
Cheers, Sean Longstaff, by the way.
Now, it was funny watching Spurs crumble at Newcastle. And as much as you wanted to laugh, you then realised that we play them on Sunday. So, Steve, you've made this point many a time. Even when we were playing all right and doing well, we never used to win at Newcastle. This is going to be a tough ask.
It is. But by the same token, I mean, there is surely no way on God's green earth that we could possibly be as bad as Spurs were in those first 25 minutes today. I mean, genuinely, I don't think I've seen a Premier League team, let alone one that's got designs of being in the Champions League, just any Premier League team just fart out that sort of level of performance. It was just pathetic, absolutely pathetic from start to finish. I mean, they've obviously conceded five goals in, 21 minutes. Mm. And then they've decided that the solution to this problem is to bring on the guy that the entire home fan base a week ago were booing to the rafters. Absolute insanity of what's going on at Tottenham at the moment. So yeah, I mean we'll go to Newcastle with a plan similar to what we had on Friday night. Newcastle are a largely attack minded team these days. They're not the sort of Steve Bruce bore everyone into submission types. They will fancy their chances against us and they will come at us, and that gives us the space to hopefully do what we did again on Friday night, and hope that we can be equally as economical with our finishing.
I mean, Eddie Howe, Glenn, would love to stick the final nail in the coffin, but is it about taking those positives from the Arsenal game into this one and just channeling what worked really well?
Yeah, well, the main positive to take from the Arsenal game and the other games that we've done all right against the big teams this year is that we needn't go to Newcastle fearing them just because they're third in the league or wherever they are. You know, we can go up there and give them a game. If they give us space, which they probably will, flying forward. You know, I mean, I thought the second leg of the Carabao Cup game. I thought, you know, we looked okay in patches and that, just that we had a dreadful start and we were already out of the game. But we, you know, we looked half decent up there then. So hopefully the players can sort of like take the positives from that and the Arsenal performance and think there's no reason why we can't get something out of this. But I mean, at the end of the day, Newcastle are where they are for a reason, and they're closing in on a Champions League spot. So having won 6-1 today, they're not exactly going to be taking it easy next week. So it's a very difficult game. And you know, we all know how Eddie Howe's teams are going to set up. I mean, I think they're better than they were earlier on in the season. With they've got Isak seems to be in the team now, and he's a better player than Callum Wilson. Gives you all sorts of different problems. So, and obviously Bruno's back after his red card now. So their defence is very, very good. So you know, we've got to hopefully do what we did to Arsenal, as Steve said. But I mean, their defence is light years better than Arsenal's. So it is going to be tough. But I fancy a kind of low scoring game in this one, but hopefully we can get something out of it. But it won't matter a damn thing if we don't beat Bournemouth on Thursday.
No, it's a long old trip for you as well, Jacob. Does it all depend on how Thursday goes? Because it is, you know, relatively speaking, it's a quick turnaround. I mean, personally, I don't want to see any players rested. They can rest in the summer all they like. But it will depend largely, I guess, on Thursday and maybe who comes in, who does well, and maybe trying to carry a bit of momentum if Thursday goes all right.
Yeah, I think it's pretty straightforward. If Southampton win, you stick with the team. And if they don't, then Saints are probably down and you can just to play what you want, really. I think Shea Adams could be back potentially for that Newcastle game, so that could give you something. Obviously, I think we've started to realise throughout the course of the season that Shea Adams is still Sam's best striker.
We've missed
still,
him. Yeah.
Yep, still the most important. He misses a lot of chances, but he creates a lot. He works, you know, his backside off. And when he's not there, you start to feel him. I think Southampton got absolutely battered in that first 20 minutes at St James's Park through switches of play, through that five at the back, if I remember, with Walker Peters left wing back, and it was horrible to watch. And then once they changed to a back four, Southampton started to get into it. Lavia started to have a bit more control in it. And I think the key for Southampton is to stop Bruno playing through midfield. And if you can stop Bruno, you've got to make sure Charlie Alcaraz is actually doing his job defensively. So we need to watch out and see if Ruben does stick with Charlie Alcaraz in that game. But I think it will be low scoring, like Glenn says, but I'd probably say Newcastle will just have enough.
Okay, Glenn, score prediction from you, please. What does that low scoring game look like?
Like I say, it all depends on the Thursday game. So let's assume we win on Thursday, and we'll go to Newcastle, and I reckon it could be a 0-0.
Okay, which in
clean sheet,
yeah, decent. Steve,
it's almost as mad as your 3-0 prediction.
Yeah, I mean a 0-0 would be. Great on, and it'd be particularly satisfying as well if we went up and earned a 0-0 by doing Eddie Howe things, of just because
the dark, I mean, art.
Oh yeah, massively. It would be immense.
You really
satisfying.
Don't like him, do you?
He's a look at his face,
Alex.
Just one of those faces that you would absolutely love to punch.
You set him off now, Glenn. You set him off.
God. I still suspect we'll probably get beat because, as mentioned, we've been good in the past and still gone up there and got beat. So, yeah, probably 2-0 Newcastle.
Right. And Jacob, your longest trip of the season?
Yeah, I think, contrary to Steve, I think Eddie Howe's a wonderful manager and could have been Southampton's manager had Ralph been sacked a year or so earlier. And I wonder what Steve's reaction would have been then. I think Southampton need to be actually quite a bit more subtle with their time wasting, because I don't know how Garen Bazunu escaped a yellow card the other night. But anyway, I think Southampton will go there, give it a go. I think they'll be attacking threat, but they'll ultimately lose 2-1.
2-1. Okay, 2-1. Again, if you're watching live, stick your predictions into the comments. A couple of other bits. Steve, a great result for the B team today. I know that you were kind of following that one along. Just sum that up for us, because that means, I think, second place in the league is pretty much guaranteed after that win at Norwich today.
Yes, so 5-2 win away at Norwich at Carrow Road. Looked like quite a big crowd in there for that, which is quite surprising given how bad Norwich have been, well, their first team have been for most of this season. But yeah, good good 5-2 win, which leaves us level on points with Leeds. So our season's finished from a regular season perspective. We played all 20 games. Leeds have got one to play, which is against West Brom, I think next week. And they are level on points with us, but one goal behind on goal difference. So basically any result for Leeds will see them finish top and get automatic promotion. And that would consign us to a playoff place. But if Leeds were to lose to West Brom, which West Brom are in the playoffs and pushing, I think they can still finish one place higher. If Leeds lose that game, then we'll win the title and get automatic promotion. So fingers crossed for that.
It's exciting times, though, Jacob. I mean, Dom Ballard again, Kamari Doyle involved today. I know you've written a few pieces about the pathway to the first team. And I know in the mailbag that you did this week, a lot of people asking about, you know, are these players going to be key for next season? There's still a lot up in the air before we really know who would be starting and where they might be starting. But it could be a nice problem to have.
It is. I think we'll only realise and know and get an understanding of whether they'll be in the plans next season is when that pre-season trips announced and whoever's in the squad. I think a lot of those players have been offered new contracts. You know, Dom Ballard and Kamari Doyle, their contracts run out in 2024. Stans would like to tie them down to a longer term deal. They've offered them off lucrative terms, but the problem isn't money, we know, which was the Jimmy J. Morgan accusation. It is whether there's a pathway. And because there's so many players, I know a lot will leave in the window, there's still, you know, a long way to go to even make this matchday squad. I think Kamari Doyle and Dom Ballard want to be playing first team football, or at least be around it. And they're probably looking at, you know, what's going on at Stanton, saying, okay, you want a bit of experience, but how's that work for you? You've got these other younger lads who are not really cutting it in the first team. These guys have been working, you know, throughout the season. You know, Dom Ballard had a taste temporarily under Nathan Jones, but then got left out altogether. And I think there's been opportunities throughout the season where stick him on the bench, play 5-6 minutes, you know, perhaps put Ballard in there instead of Sekou Moura at times this season. So I think next year there'll be a lot of change in the first team, and it will just all depend on how well the B team's doing and whether there's a pathway for these players, because there's been a lot of progress recently in the B team and the under 18s. It's just whether they get a chance to prove it in the first team. But of course, a lot will be dependent on whoever the manager is.
Yeah, and it could be a very different discussion this time next weekend. Glenn, I don't know if you caught the women's result as well today.
Yeah.
Another decent win for them. Looks like a mid-table finish, but some good wins along the way, and I would say maybe a solid first season in the championship.
Yeah, I think it has been overall. It's nice, you know, they had a sort of like 4 or 5 weeks where they weren't getting results and weren't scoring any goals. So it's nice that they've won the last two to sort of like give the season a respectable end. I don't know who they've got to play. They've got one game left.
Sheffield United.
So
that's St Mary's as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's another opportunity to win because they're down near the bottom. So so hopefully they get that result as well. And I think that would make them finish fifth or maybe sixth. So that's a decent first season. If you get promoted and you're not remotely in the relegation picture, then in your first season, then that's good. And they'll be looking at pushing on next season and trying to challenge. But as Steve has said before, it's very difficult to get out of this league upwards because it's just one place. So whether that will change, don't know. But no, overall, I think they'll be pretty happy with the season and how it's gone. But I'm sure they'll be like there was at the end of last season. There'll be quite a churn of players, as there always seems to be in a women's game, and hopefully they can kick on next year.
Well, it's always nice to finish on a couple of positives. It's going to be a big week. Don't forget you can follow Total Saints Podcast on Facebook and Twitter. It's at Total Saints Pod. On the website, totalsaints.co.uk, there's a link on there to the online shop, and you can drop us an email if you like during the week. You'll also find us on Patreon. That's where you can find out more about supporting the podcast with the monthly contributions. It's patreon.com/Total Saints Podcast. Now, as you probably know, we've got four different tiers on there, ranging from £5 to £20 per month, and each of the tiers comes with different perks, including some shout-outs for those patrons in the Francis Benali and the Mick Shannon tier. So thank you to Dave Melton, Mark Atkins, Matt Hall, Andy Hollis, also Anthony Thompson, who are in our Francis Benali tier, and Colt Baker, Dave Ernsberger, Ed Busy, Nick Higston, Phil Cook, Matt Rose, and Nick Reed in the Mick Shannon tier. Thank you to Glenn. Thanks to Steve. Thanks to Jacob for joining us. Thank you for watching. Let's hope for a really positive week, and we'll catch you again soon.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.